Good afternoon and welcome to Midwest Beat here on Lakeshore Public Radio, on the dial at 89.1 FM and streaming worldwide at lakeshorepublicradio.org. I'm Tom Lounge, as your host. This program is all about music and the people who make it. Coming up on the second hour, right around 2 p.m., we'll be talking with songwriter, multi-instrumentalist Albert Bouchard, original drummer and co-founder of Blue Oyster Cult. He's got a newly recorded version of the classic 88 album Imaginost, cleverly titled Reimaginos. That's coming up the second hour. The first hour, coming up momentarily, will be musician-producer Mark Mangold of the classic band American Tears. They started out their career in the mid-70s. They got a brand new album out now called Free Angel Express. We'll be talking all the way to Sweden with Mark Mangold coming up after your headlines. Good afternoon, I'm Tom Lounges, and this is Midwest Beat, a program all about music and the people who make it. Coming up in the second hour, I'll have an old friend, seems like a friend, because I grew up listening to his music. Mr. Albert Bouchard will be with us by phone. He is the original drummer and co-founder of Blue Oyster Cult. You remember those guys? He used to wear the Godzilla head in the early days while they were playing on stage. We'll talk to him about that and his new project, which is a reimagining of the classic 1988 Blue Oyster Cult album Imaginos. And Albert cleverly titled this new reimagining as Reimaginos. We'll play some songs from it. We'll talk to Albert about what he's been up to lately with a new project that he's got, as well as this new album. But first, we're going to get to musician-producer Mark Mangold. Now, the name may not be a household name here in the U.S., but he's been around a long time with a classic rock band called American Tears. In fact, I discovered these guys back in the mid to late 70s. They were signed to Columbia Records, did a few albums. I used to have a friend that was a big fan of theirs and turned me on to American Tears. Well, I was happy to find out that American Tears are back. They did a reunion of sorts in 2018, and they've got a brand new album called Free Angel Express, featuring, of course, Mr. Mark Mangold on keyboards and vocals, just like he was back in the day. We're going to play a song right now. This is the second single from this newly released album, American Tears Free Angel Express. This one's called Woke. If you like prog rock and keyboard-driven rock, stay with us. This hour is going to be eye-opening and ear-opening as we debut American Tears on Lakeshore Public Radio. Free Angel Express and Woke.
The truth that you open up, the door that will never close, will I find you on your knees? I hunt in the weary sky. Thank you.
New music, American Tears. Doors that will never close. The truth will open you up. Are you woke to the injustice? I think a lot of us are these days. There's a lot of talk of getting things back in order, of changing things, of opening new doors, of closing old doors. And I think that's the message of this new song, which I believe is the second single from American Tears. It's their first album in a couple of years, and I'm glad to see them back. I was a fan back in the 1970s. They recorded a few albums with Columbia Records, CBS. In fact, I got a couple of the old vinyls here tonight with me that I just brought along because it just made me feel good to be able to talk to this gentleman, Mark Mangold, who is the impetus behind it, the band leader, the founder, the keyboardist, the singer, producer, and, well, he's done about everything but sweep up the studio probably. Mark, are you with us?
Hi, Tom. I'm here. How are you?
I'm fine. I got to say, I was thrilled when I got noticed that American Tears had a new album out. I missed the 2018 release. I didn't know you guys had gotten back together, but this one did not pass me. It was on my radar for a while now.
Yeah, you know, it seems like one long record, but we've done three in the last 3 years. The first one was Hardcore, 2017.
Missed that one, too.
That was well-received, and then last year was White Flag, and now we have Free Angel Express. And I you described the lyric and the sentiment of the song like perfectly, so thank you for that.
Not a problem. Now, we're talking with you. You're in Sweden, correct?
Yes, sir.
What took you to Sweden? I understand you're living there now.
Well, I was kind of on a visit, and because of all this border stuff, I go back and forth between Sweden and New York a lot because the huge music scene here, a lot of great players and producers and whatever. But because of this border stuff and kind of the way that the U.S. is handling it, it's hard to get back and then to the U.S. and then get back into Sweden. So I'm hoping things improve, and I hate to say it, but the way that the U.S. is handling it is not looked upon very well by most of the rest of the world.
Understandable.
Yeah, I mean, if I came back to the U.S., I'd probably have not be able to get back into Sweden.
All right. Now, how is the COVID situation over there? I mean, we hear different stories of different countries, and I understand a lot of Europe was doing very well. I don't know how they're doing now, but how is it where you are at?
They're doing very well. It's kind of almost not an issue. I mean, people, you know, social distance, they wear masks. They're not whining about it.
Mm-hmm.
And they're treating it, you know, with common sense. And these preventative measures seem to be working. I mean, it's not like it is in the States where it's just reaching an all-time high. If somebody would do something about it and really honor these preventative measures, I think, you know, they'd lick it like they are kind of doing here.
Right. It just seems like nobody follows rules. We're, you know, we've always been the rebels, and it seems like it's just a level of stupidity that sometimes you got to do what you got to do to get through things.
It's not, you know, rocket science.
Right. Right.
I don't know how we got to talking about this, but yeah, I mean, it's affecting all of our lives. But
so does that mean you're touring over there? I mean, if things are getting better, are you able to play out?
No.
Okay.
No, we're not. I mean, one of the preventive measures is, you know, no big crowds like that. Restaurants are careful. There's no concerts going on. They're having some weird. I mean, it's getting too cold, but they're having some drive-in kind of shows, which are interesting. People park in their cars and watch a band. So they're trying to figure out ways to do things.
Yeah, they did a couple of those here in Chicagoland too. Have you guys done that yet? The drive-in?
No, we're not playing at the moment. First of all, our bass player's in Texas and our drummer's in Germany, and I'm in Stockholm. So we are doing these, you know, these kind of long distance videos, and a lot of stuff is done long distance. But no, unfortunately, there's no gigging at the moment, which is really a shame, because, you know, you miss the camaraderie and you miss that sound of being in a room and hearing the real instruments, and, you know, something you don't get on headphones.
Right. So was this album done before COVID hit then?
Yeah, pretty much. I guess it was done around March or April. You know, maybe little tweaks, and it took a little while to get out and, you know, get the label and then release it. So, but we, yeah, I mean, like I said, it's kind of been like one record since 2017 was hardcore. We just never stopped. And most of the next record's actually done as well.
Wow.
Kind of, you know, it's not hard to do these days. You don't have to wait for the major studio like in the old days where mm-hmm. you know, you need to get that drum sound or whatever. You can do so much on computers and on the Mac. So if you have an idea, you just go in the next room, which could be the bathroom, and you just get it into your computer. So, you know, you have a good microphone, and there's ways to play.
Well, your original go ahead.
Keyboard mm-hmm. and everything. So it's all very accessible.
You came out at a time with the Columbia albums back in 73, I think it was, 74-ish. I was just getting out of high school about that time, and a friend of mine turned me on to your second album. And I went back and explored after that. Powerhouse was still a favorite of mine. In fact, I was just playing Promise to Be Free, the I guess you call it a power ballad.
Wow.
Love that song. That's a great one.
Oh, cool. Thank you so much.
Yeah. You guys came out at a time when, I hate to use the term prog rock, that's so dated sounding, but keyboard-driven music was a big deal here in America. Of course, we had ELP, and we had Brian Auger, and we had all of Brian Eno was doing stuff with Bowie and with his different projects. Why do you think that sound didn't catch on as big as it did in other parts of the world? The keyboard, I don't think, has ever been as respected in America as, say, the guitar.
Yeah, it's interesting. People love the guitar. I mean, we all love the guitar. My instrument is keyboard, so that's how I express myself.
Mm-hmm.
There's really, I don't have the explanation. I know when I was younger, my dad would like, play a small instrument, you know, to try to get me to play the saxophone. Do something you can carry around and, you know, make money. And, of course, I went to the Hammond organ, which was 450 pounds and, you know, two keyboards. And, you know, you get cursed out by the guys in your band.
Right.
Every freaking gig for having to, you know, move the thing around. So I kind of went in the opposite direction for some reason. I just love the lushness of creating these tapestries, which... is a lot of what American Tears is about, besides the kind of abnormal songs that don't have formula.
Mm-hmm.
There's maybe some cosmic instinctual formula in there in terms of where to go with the next energy, but it's not like, okay, we got to go to the chorus now and then the bridge and then to the chorus and fade. So it's kind of rebelling against that. But in terms of layering a Hammond organ and a Mellotron or a string section. I mean, there's so much you can do with keyboards now. You can, I mean, it's really 30, 40 instruments at once.
Right.
You can get string sections and choirs and, you know, anything you want. So I love putting together these animals that are not any of the components, but are some new kind of thing that hopefully gets your adrenaline going, or really my adrenaline, and, you know, makes the hair in your arms stick up, because that's kind of my goal, and I kind of feel like if it's not exciting me, how can it excite anybody else?
Right.
So I love getting these, and I love the Hammond organ. So there's something symphonic about it sometimes, but also, like Sledgehammer, for instance, it would be a guitar riff
mm-hmm.
if it were played by, you know, AC/DC or whatever, Eddie Van Halen, but put on the organ, a grindy organ, it becomes a different thing. And it's not really prog, it's really just rock.
That's a rock song. Definitely a rock song.
But once you put it on an organ, and I love to, you know, then you double the organ with a synth and give it some tapestry and like that, it just becomes a different thing. So it's refreshing to me.
I like a lot of the different textures that you find on this album. I mean, you go the distance from the opener with your Sledgehammers, which we'll play in a minute. That's basically a harder rocking song. Of course, then the title track, which is a medley, the Free Angel Express Resist Outta Here, which is probably one of my favorite tracks on here. It's an instrumental. And then, of course, Woke, which we just played, goes into Shadows, Aching Karma, which is another favorite of mine. And one of the beautiful things about an album, when you know the album is a good album, is when you play it over and over, and every time you play it, you hear something different, or you find yourself gravitating to say, now that's my favorite song, not the other one. No, that one's the favorite. Because so much works together.
So much. Yeah.
And this album had that effect on me. Every time I played it, I found nuances and things I didn't quite hear the first time, but I paid attention to the next time, and then I'd hear something else come out. And I think that is the secret with keyboards, is that there's so many textures and layers that you can create that it's almost too much for the human ear to hear at one time, to just ingest.
Yeah, it's a bit of work to put that together, and the mastering. The approach was, this kind of music, I don't know, had a certain size, you know, in the 60s and 70s, and Deep Purple or whatever, you know, it was a certain amount of high end, a certain amount of low end, but now, technically, you know, you go to a Batman movie and you hear Hans Zimmer soundtracks and they're shaking the floor.
Right.
So my approach to this was really bringing that modern sound and that width and breadth and dimension to rock, and getting more bottom on a song. Like, we have a song on the White Flags record called Fire Down Below, and I just, it's like, as much bottom as you can put in a speaker, that's it. You know, we want to just increase the spectrum of the sound, and you can get a lot more in there. You don't have to crush it all. So it's about creating moments. And again, like I said, there's no safety net. So rather than going to the chorus, it's like, okay, what can we do next? And it might be an elephant screaming. Or, you know, it might be a tempo change. Or really, where does the energy want to take you here? So it's riskier to create. Maybe, I don't know, not scary, because I don't give a shit. But you can't lean back on the good old formulas. And I think it requires more creativity. And I wish more people would do it, because I'm so curious what certain people would do without that safety net.
Mm-hmm.
And okay, man, you got to be creative here. You know, you can pile up, you know, dirty guitars like Brian May, or you can do whatever the hell you want. So,
right.
It makes for surprises, and for me, it makes it more interesting and less generic, because I'm just so tired of the generic stuff. You know, that's kind of one of the things about American Tears, is just rebelling against this generic formula and the titles, and this is prog, and this is melodic rock, and this is, you know, in those days, I mean, Yes was pop.
Right. ELP was pop. Zappa, you know, King Crimson, yeah, even to a point, was pop. We always tried to...
These labels kind of kill it.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, let's play the first single, which is Sledgehammered, we'll be back with you after this. So stay with us, enjoy, people. This is a completely different sound than we heard on Woke, and you'll find different textures and different sounds from every song as this track or as this album progresses. And the sequencing is also extremely important here, and we'll talk a little about that and the closeness of being the writer, producer, engineer, and musician, all wrapped in one. We'll talk with Mark on that after we listen to this. Sledgehammered. American Tears. Getting sledgehammered on Midwest Beat here on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Tom Lounges. That is new music, American Tears. First single, first track on the new album, Free Angel Express, out now. And my guest is Mark Mangold. He is the guy behind all this. Mark, I gotta ask you, as the songwriter, the arranger, the engineer, the musician that plays it, the producer, do you ever feel too close to the music to be objective? I mean, you're doing it all. How do you get a balance? Do you, is there a go-to person you have?
No, I don't care.
Okay. It's your thing.
It started out in isolation.
Okay.
And, you know, my girlfriend said, what are you doing in there? Are you crazy? It's like a 10-minute song. I'm kind of obsessed in a way.
Okay.
And I was longing to, you know, get back to the keyboard, you know, kind of recoiling against the pop after a while and wanting to do an organ solo, for God's sake, or a synth solo. So I really was about just expressing myself and trying to make it as good as I could. So I dug it, and I'm frankly gratified as hell and surprised in a way that people are digging it. I mean, I don't know, but, you know, you can't make the whole creative process. I mean, and this is something that's not only me, but everybody's like, you're doing it to be creative. You're not doing it to second guess the listener.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you do have this go-to person, who the hell are they? And you trust them? I mean, who the hell is that going to be?
Right.
God? So, you know, I channel in a way. I mean, if I'm hearing something at 5 o'clock in the morning and I wake up, you know, hearing a lyric in my head or a melody, a lot of these things came from dreams or just from ideas that you have early morning and you can just, you know, go in and record it. So I really trust that. I trust where it's coming from. In a way, I feel honored if it's coming from another place that whatever it is giving it to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually kind of feel guilty if I don't do it. I feel like, well, it's being given to me, and if I don't do something with it, then go to somebody else.
Right. Yeah. So, you got to accept it's channeling.
Yeah. You know, I try to honor the muse in a way, and just do it as well as I can. You're not thinking about risk or commercial. I mean, there's genres where you do that, but this is not that.
Okay. Why keyboards? What drew you to keyboards? You mentioned your dad wanted you to have a smaller instrument. What was it about the keyboard that attracted you, and was it your first instrument?
Well, I started on drums. I was a drummer in bands for a while. I just like playing more than one note. You know, I love these chord clusters that you could do, and then you pile something else on it. So I wasn't really happy about just playing one note, I guess. Though in the early days, you know, we were kind of waiting for things to be invented in the early days.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the synth had one note, the Mini Moog had one note, the Odyssey had one note, the organ had, you know, as many notes as you have fingers or feet. And then the Arp Strings was invented. And, you know, Gary Wright took that to Dreamweaver, and everything as it was invented was really jumped on by keyboard players. The Mellotron, which is basically a box with like 30 tape recorders in it. You press a note and you're getting a piece of tape with a string sound or a flute sound or a whatever kind of sound they choose to put on it. So you could play chords with the Mellotron, and everybody jumped on that. You know, the Beatles and 10cc jumped on those instruments. So it was really kind of waiting for these things to be invented. And now as a keyboard player, I mean, it's a great time to be alive. You have access to so much, and so much of these sounds, which were very difficult to record, are in a computer probably better than the real thing in a way.
Right.
And you know, being in Sweden, my Hammond organ's in New York, so I can't sadly sitting there. No one's playing it for 6 months. How sad it must be. But there's other ways to get those sounds, and you don't have to be in a large studio, and you don't have to set up a mic. You know, the Leslie speaker is a huge speaker with a spinning speaker in it.
Right. I remember
so
seeing
the
Felix Cavallari a few times, and he always had that. Oh, yeah, what Felix. A phenomenal sound that had.
Yeah, and Vanilla Fudge, and
right.
of course, Deep Purple. You know, he put, John Lord puts it, you know, grinds it up and everything. But to mic that was very difficult because the spinning speaker and then the wind would hit the microphone, so you have a thing going on. So, you know, it's kind of easier now.
I can't imagine... I can't imagine being you and having all those keyboards and still having to be able to sing and remember words and entertain. A lot of times the keyboard player is kind of to the side because he's focused so much on the keys, but you're doing it all and doing it all well. So focusing on the singing while you're hitting multiple keyboards kind of blows my mind because I can't even type on my computer and talk at the same time.
That's funny. I don't know. You just, you know, you do it and you just get used to it and it becomes kind of second nature, I guess. You know, it's not really, you know, I don't know. It's just, you know, something you do. I'm sure you do things that I can't do.
I don't know.
I was going to say, you mentioned Felix. I used to live in Long Island, 10 minutes away from a place called the Action House. And at the Action House, Long Island was such a fertile music scene.
Mm-hmm.
There, on any given night, it would be the Rascals, opening up for the Rascals, the Vanilla Fudge, and the Vagrants. I was in a band called the Gathering Storm there. So this the Action House was kind of a center of Long Island. Billy Joel played there, and so many bands. So it was a wonderful place to grow up, especially if you're a keyboard player, because it was kind of the home of the Hammond organ thing, in a way.
Right.
With the Rascals, and, you know. So it was very cool, and I got my first Hammond organ, a beautiful blonde C3, which weighed 425 pounds. but I got it when I was about 18. I saved up. Used to have a Lowry, which was cute little kind of cheesy kind of an organ sound. But everybody was gravitating towards the Hammond because it was just so beautiful and lush and had that sound. So.
Being from that burg over there, did you do shows with Sid Bernstein like the Rascals had done?
We did. I mean, I knew Sid very well, actually. Yeah.
He was an incredible guy that really just shone a light on so many wonderful talents from that area.
Sid was awesome. I mean, the sweetest guy. Yeah. And he brought the Beatles over for their first concert at Carnegie Hall. I don't know.
That's right. I forgot about that.
Yeah.
What's
There was another guy named Phil Basil who managed Vanilla, who owned the club and also managed Vanilla Fudge and the Vagrants, and he was really somebody who got things done. And all these fans were on Atlantic Records. So Atlantic Records was a great place for a lot of these breakout East Coast band. Very cool.
How did you land on Columbia? And what happened with Columbia? I mean, I don't think they really knew what to do with you guys.
Well, it started with a band called Valhalla that I was in. I mean, the whole scene was so different in those days. You could play at a club and get a call the next day by somebody, a talent scout, and you could get offered a record deal, which is exactly what happened to the band Valhalla I was in. We had a record on United Artists. And the people I met through Valhalla stuck with me and then got assigned to Columbia. And we did three records and some beautiful tours. I mean, with Peter Frampton and Alvin Lee. I mean, the list goes on. We had some great exposure at the time. And yes, it wasn't your, you know, straight up and down guitar rock was what it was. And we had our audience. And then we morphed into a band called Touch for the third record because you're talking about me doing it all, you know, being alone. It was like I got lonely being on stage alone and doing all that. And, you know, the other guys in the band could sing. They were awesome players, which is a lot of what American Tears is about. But then we morphed into a band called Touch, and Craig Brooks joined the band, and the pendulum kind of swung. Now it was 70 tracks of background vocals and lush guitars and tapestries, and Touch came out, which was three of the guys from American Tears, the last American Tears record, and we came out on Atlantic, and that's a whole other story.
Okay, yeah, I'm not familiar with Touch. Like I said, I have some of the
You're
early
not
stuff.
Familiar with Touch?
No.
That's interesting. Well, that's probably one of the more successful.
I'll have to look into that.
That I did. And then, you know, I started working with Michael Bolton, and I wrote
right.
songs with Michael.
And you did Cher, too, right? You worked with Cher.
Yeah, Michael and I wrote a song for, yeah. But Touch had a great run. We toured Europe with Rainbow. We were managed by the people who managed Rainbow, and we toured far and wide. And we actually played the first Donington, you know, Donington.
Oh, yeah.
Masters of Rock. We were actually the first band to ever play, I found out 20 years later, to be on the stage at the Donington. This was the first Donington. And we were opening up for Rainbow and Scorpions and Judas Priest and April Wine and who else? Riot. And in front of 60,000 people. So Touch was, you know, got a nice shot.
Okay, I'll have to look into that. Another great...
And Touch, by the way...
Go ahead.
Touch just is completing another album 30 years later. We're just actually mixing it. So anybody who's familiar with Touch, we're kind of back.
All right. So you're going to be doing both bands simultaneously?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. You have...
I don't know if we're going to play or tour. And we'll see what happens with the tour. But in terms of recording and the creative process, it will be out there.
This new album has Barry Sparks and Alex Landenberg, and
yes.
Is that the formal American Tears lineup now, or is that just the recording lineup? And if if and when we get to touring again with when COVID subsides, will they be on the road with you?
Yes, that's the band.
Okay, all right.
And I was so fortunate to work with Alex, who's an amazing drummer. He's also in a band called Camelot, and you know Barry plays with Michael Schenker. He used to play with Dokken and Yngwie, so they're superb musicians, and it's wonderful to be able to just collaborate with those guys because they really know what they're doing, and they're amazing on stage. I just can't wait till we play because. You know, I don't know if you've ever seen Alex, but, you know, he's also in a band called Syra, but Camelot is surrounded by a drum kit, and he's just one of the best drummers on the planet, as far as I'm concerned. They're all great showmen.
If we could ever get in front
of an audience, that would just be so much fun.
You've created a couple of videos for this album. Are you releasing stuff digitally? Is that how you're doing the singles, or are you actually releasing singles?
It's on CD. Everything's on CD.
Well, I have the CD of the album. I didn't know if you were releasing singles digitally.
I don't know what that means. I mean, they're released on all the streaming devices and Spotify and everything like that. There's no, I don't know, 45. I don't know what.
Yeah,
is
yeah.
Anymore.
It's
digital, but it's really, I guess you can download it on iTunes or Spotify or any of the other places, but there's no actual physical CD of the singles or anything like that.
Okay. I see the video is posted up there, the Sledgehammered official lyric video. Obviously,
yeah.
It seems like you're in charge of that as well, so you've got your hands in everything. Where would it... was that done long distance as far as the guys?
You know, that's the label. They put that together. And,
okay.
Yes, it was done long distance. With these things, I just saw Paul McCartney in his living room, you know, playing a song on acoustic guitar or something. It's like everybody is these great bands, like the Eagles, they were in their living room. It's like you used to seeing them on these huge stages, it's so sad.
Right.
But that's what we're doing now. I recorded my parts in my studio, and Barry did his in Texas, and Alex has all his drums set up in the basement, and you press go on the video, and you send it to a guy who we have this amazing video editor. He puts it together, and you know, hopefully makes it somewhat exciting.
Yeah, it's a great video. I enjoy it. In fact, yeah. I've had it shared for the listeners. You can go to my Facebook page, and you can find a link to the video along with a picture here of Mark surrounded by keyboards, which I believe is a current shot. You got like 6 or 7 keyboards you're being enveloped in there. So
that's my home.
Oh my goodness! No wonder your girlfriend can't find you. So
well,
what?
You know, in Stockholm, I just have 3 here in Stockholm, but in New York, you know, that's where I have my.
Okay. Well, we're going to play another song. We'll come back and say goodbye and close out with any final thoughts. But what would you like to play from the album?
Well, if you want to play Free Angel Express, but it's 10 minutes. So maybe it's dangerous of you to ask that question.
Okay.
You know, people are like to set it on fire. If that's too long, I would say set it on fire. People are digging a lot.
Okay. Well, we'll play that then. Is that going to be a forthcoming single after Woke?
Not that I know of.
Okay.
What is a single? I don't even know what a single is anymore.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like it's a David Guetta single or a Britney Spears single. It's like in this genre, I think it's more album oriented in a way. So.
Okay. Well, we'll play Set It On Fire. We'll be back a final time with Mark. And I do want to touch on...
You chickened out. Okay. I should have been 3 minutes off of Free Angel Express. But I hope people hear it because, you know, the middle of Free Angel Express is a song called Resist, which is very angry.
Right.
I mean, there's some aggression and anger on these records because, you know, it's the way I express myself. And
right. Well, there's the chance to fight the power on there.
Yeah, it's like me taking a knee, which, you know, it's a benevolent way of you know, kind of speaking your mind. But, yeah, so Free Angel Express is pretty cool.
All right.
Yeah, so Set It On Fire. Enjoy it.
All right, let's play this. We'll be back with Mark a final time after this. Again, you're listening to Midwest Beats. I'm Lounges, and we'll be back.
Turns to desire.
Don't be one of those fools sitting on the porch. Set things on fire. Make it interesting. And learn that things need to change. And it's an underlying theme in this amazing new album from American Tears, Free Angel Express. My guest this hour has been Mark Mangold. He is the guy behind it all, the songwriter, producer, keyboardist, vocalist. And Mark, I thank you for your time. I do have two quick questions, and that is, have you thought or have you done any kind of film work? I mean, we see so many, John Paul Jones, we see Patrick Morantz, we see Jan Hammer. A lot of the great keyboardists have gone on to do film work and scores. I think you would be a natural at that. Have you thought of that or done that at all?
The stuff I've done with film, I mean, I would love to do what you're saying. That kind of getting out there to the right people. I have done some pop things that have been in some films, a bunch of things, but never really like a soundtrack where I could just create those moods and tapestry. I would love to do that.
So is that something then on your bucket list?
Yeah, it would be wonderful. You know, that movie business is, you know, that's a whole other business, and that's about getting to the right people and
right.
Having a director that wants you to, you know, marry their film in a way.
Right.
But yeah, I would love to do that.
The other question I had, and as a big fan of Dave Brubeck, you covered Blue Rondo, and Dave has played here in Grant Park. He's been a big part of the Chicago Jazz Festival over the years. Of course, we lost him a number of years back, but for a long time, he was a staple here in Chicago, playing every summer. Wow. And to tackle a classic, it takes a certain finesse and a certain level of accomplishment and talent. And I think, as a Brubeck fan, I think you brought a new freshness to Blue Rondo. And we're going to close with a little bit of that before we get into our next hour show. But why did you choose to do that?
I've always loved that song. And I get tired of 4/4 time.
Mm-hmm.
That goes from 7/4 to 9/4. And I just loved it. I always heard it in my head more aggressive. You know, I heard it with Hammond organ and more aggressive. And I just wanted to do it as a little bit of an obsession, maybe. ELP did it, but they did it 4/4 times. So they kind of, with all due respect to those phenomenal guys, they, maybe homogenized it, maybe made it a little more accessible. But I wanted to stick to the original arrangement, which is, pretty complicated.
Right.
So I just had to get it out of my system before I died.
Another bucket list moment accomplished there. So,
yes, exactly.
Some
people like it, I mean,
I like it.
Really dig it.
I think.
I mean, it's very true to the original. It's
right.
The exact arrangement, except it kicks ass.
Right. I think Mr. Brubeck would be very pleased to see you take it to the next level and reintroduce it to a new generation. I really do.
Or else he might hate it and tell me I suck and get out of his face. We don't know what he would say.
That's true.
He might be totally offended,
Well, I'm gonna play it as we say goodbye here. Where can people follow you? I know you're on Facebook. I know there's an American Tears page on Facebook. Is there a formal website?
No, there isn't. We're kind of dealing with Facebook, and of course, Deco Records, Deco Entertainment. They're pretty up to date on what we're doing. So I would say those two places are probably the best places.
Okay. Deco, for the listeners, is DEKO. Look up Deco Entertainment and find out details there. The new album you mentioned is almost done.
I mean, if you look up American Tears,
Okay. You mentioned the new album you said is almost done. Do you have an anticipated release on that?
Not really. It'll be sometime next year.
Okay. Same thing with Touch?
Touch will probably be January or February. That's basically done. We're just mixing that.
All right.
That's a lot of fun. And I'm also working on another record called Keys, which is just keyboard players with some cameo appearances by some kind of famous keyboard players. And I'm getting sick of myself. So, you know, I know what I can do. I want to see what other people can do. And
all
collaborating
right.
is a lot of fun. So that's, it's kind of a very aggressive, scathing, melodic rock. But it's all keys. And it's, you know, it's exciting. I really.
Will those be on Deco also?
Probably.
Okay.
I think will probably be on Deco.
All right. Well, when Touch comes out, definitely.
I'm not sure about Touch yet.
When Touch comes out, I definitely would like to have you come back on, and we'll focus on that album. And maybe we'll be able to stretch out our time together a little more.
I would love to, man. This was, you know, you really know what you're talking about, and it's so nice to know somebody who really, you know, knows this stuff. It's like, yeah, it's a wonderful culture, should I say, of, you know, where all this music is coming from.
Mm-hmm.
And it's nice to kind of be a part of it and to talk to people who are in it. So it was a real pleasure.
Well, it's pleasure was all mine as a guy who's been following your career for a while. I do appreciate your time with us, especially since you're calling from so far away. And be safe, and we look forward to getting through all this and having you come back to the States and bring us some music live on stage.
I hope so. Thank you, Tom.
All right. Thank you, Mark. All right. This is the American Tears version of a great classic by Mr. David Brubeck. And we're going to play it. Blue Rondo. Coming up in just a few minutes, we'll have another young man who has been part of my youth, Albert Bouchard. I remember seeing him with Blue Oyster Cult back in the 70s when he still wore a Godzilla head. So we'll talk to him in a few moments. But right now, let's enjoy this Blue Rondo, American Tears. I'll be back soon.